Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill at verrill-law.com. Today we're going to be talking with Kevin Lewis, CEO of Community Health Options. Kevin has been with us before, but way back in 2013. Kevin, welcome back.
Good morning, David. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
You know, it's hard to believe. There's nothing that has ever changed. Nothing has ever gone different in healthcare.
No,
I mean, we got nothing to discuss.
Pretty static.
It's unbelievable when you think of, I think at that point, the healthcare exchanges weren't even active. Is that correct about right?
Right. They were just going online. In fact, it took a few, many weeks until we actually saw the mechanics of those health exchanges back then working.
Yeah,
the way they were intended. So it was anxiety provoking back then. I can still remember it.
Of course.
But you know, we were able to motor through, and we had a great open enrollment that first year, and it's been an interesting ride ever since.
No question. So let's start at that top level for a minute.
Sure.
If you look at today, the exchanges are kind of just what they are. They're part of everyday, every year life, right? People are going on and off them. But there are changes that have certainly happened over the last 3-4 years even. So if we said, hey, what's the status of healthcare today from a provider perspective, someone who has an exchange and does that. So tell me what your thoughts are.
Well, it's really matured so that people do have that shopping experience. It's not novel any longer. And whether a person is eligible for a subsidy or not, the marketplace does offer that ability to compare plans among carriers, to get into some of the details, to be able to understand what kind of coverage is out there for them. And that's been an important, aspect of the health insurance market since 2013. And there's been, ongoing development off exchange. And one of the things that's really happened in the last couple of years, and particularly in place for 2019, is the Maine Guaranteed Access to Reinsurance Association. So that's a lot of gobbledygook for most people. I mean, what does MGARA mean anyway? It sits in the background. And what it means is that it takes sort of financial care of some of the highest risk members of the individual pool. And that gives carriers an ability to price a little lower. And we've seen the beginning evidence of that in 2019 and expect that to continue on.
Yeah, I mean, certainly when you look at it, you think you got individuals, you got families, you got businesses, small and large, because that's a different market between the two, as we all know. You've got the provider side.
Yeah.
You've got the broker side.
Yeah.
You have so many aspects that have fundamentally shifted some of their models. You've got hospitals and healthcare systems getting together now in a much tighter pattern than they used to in the past. Mm-hmm. You know, there's certainly a lot to be said for the ever-changing models. Is that how we're going to see it over the next few years? I mean, is this just going to continue to be an evolution of things that are going to be tried and true? I mean, it's the free market system. I give it that. But, is this going to be, or do you really see a consolidation at some point?
I believe that we'll continue to see evolution, that we'll continue to see competition. I do worry for consolidation's sake, whether it's on the carrier side or the provider side, that tends to limit the ability of consumers and business owners to get the advantage that competition yields. On the other hand, if there are some good alignments out there and we can get better efficiency, then that should benefit consumers. And I say should with italics because I have yet to really see that come into full light. The individual market has been shrinking somewhat. The small group market has been shrinking even more. And that's of concern. So when we look at the individual and small group markets together, they have been declining. That poses risk, and that poses problems for those pools, because it means that, by and large, the healthier segments of those pools, because of the increasing costs of premiums, they're leaving. They're either leaving for employment-based coverage, or they're leaving, if they're a small group, business owner, they're leaving for some sort of quasi self-insured model that's outside of the community rated pool. So I won't get into all the mechanics, but it does pose a risk to those that are left in the community rated pool, because those premiums will keep going up.
So let's talk about costs for a minute. Yeah. What are you seeing on an average, and maybe I'm not speaking the right lingo, but I'll go with an average of cost increases? We're seeing 1%, 3%, 5%. What are we talking about in terms of numbers today?
Yeah, so for 2020, our rates are flat, essentially, on average. It's a 0.8% increase on the individual market. On the small group market, it's an average of about 10%. And that's par for the course on the small group market. In fact, we're on the lower end of that spectrum in terms of increases. And when you look at the offerings for 2020, we believe we're going to be towards the lower end of the bell curve, but not the lowest. So we're very competitive, and yet we're mindful of being, obviously, having sufficiency in our premium. The individual market really benefits from that guaranteed access to reinsurance mechanism that I talked about just a minute ago. And we see drops. Anthem and Harvard Pilgrim have actually decreased their rates going into 2020. So this is going to, I think, benefit consumers to the extent that they're really looking at what's in that coverage. And that's something, so beyond the premium, we want to make sure people are aware of what's covered, what are those deductibles, what's the out-of-pocket max, what's the network that they're tapping into. Those are harder to get into. It's easier just to look at the premium.
It's interesting. You talked a little bit about the smaller market being a challenge for employers. And when I think of the Northeast in general, small business, I would argue in the whole country, but small business is the backbone, right?
In Maine.
Certainly in Maine. No question about that. And that smaller market is the one that a lot of employers are in. There's a lot of businesses in Maine in that small market. Why do you see it declining? Why is there people jumping out? Is it really because there are other alternatives? I mean, I know there's been talk about association programs and things, so I haven't seen much about them.
Right. I think there are a few different factors involved in terms of the shrinking small group market. One, the strength of the promise of the individual market with the availability of subsidies allows for some business owners to have their employees, know that their employees have access to that coverage. And not that is by itself enough perhaps to compete, but it allows that peace of mind that, my employees have ability to get that coverage, and they can do it with the subsidy if they're depending on the income level of the family. On the other hand, we know it's a hyper-competitive market in terms of the labor market. And so the ability to get into coverage is bounded by the cost of the premium. And so for a healthy group, they can look at some alternatives these days that involve sort of a quasi-self-funded model where, they, through a carrier and a reinsurer, essentially are buying the reinsurance premiums. And that's great until something blows up. And then those reinsurance premiums become even greater than what they would find in the community rated market. So the community rated market winds up being essentially more and more like the high risk pool for the small group. And that's where we're tending to right now. And we can do some things about it. And I think there's a lot of good minds wrapped around how do we fix this? Whether we increase the size of the small group, going from, you know, increasing from 50 to 100, whether we somehow pool the individual and small group together. Does that get the advantage of some of those subsidies for the small group? Do we apply a reinsurance mechanism, much as we have done with the individual market, to the small group market? So these are all different ideas that are being explored. As long as people can peel off to a self-insured and leave the community rated pool, we're always going to have, I think, some negative impact on the community rated.
We're talking with Kevin Lewis, CEO of Community Health Options. We're talking about basically healthcare today. You know, it's interesting. I think you and I have talked in this segment a little bit about the challenges of cost, right? It's just reality that, especially for small employers, they keep going up. I've never had it go down. Let's put it that way. I don't know anybody that's had it go down in reality. Do you see anything on the state or federal side that is looking at this to assist in that area, or is there anything that is being looked at from that level?
A couple of things. So you mentioned association health plans, and that really hasn't come into any fruition. A new mechanism, the individual coverage HRA, is a solution that could be relevant to small groups and large groups.
Explain that.
So previously, HRAs could not be used by employees to pay for premiums. Mm-hmm. Now with the new regulation, well, relatively new, it came out this late this spring, employers can set an amount that goes into the employee's HRA, and the employee, as long as they have coverage, can use that HRA to buy the premium of that coverage. They can use it for other things as well, but they have to maintain coverage. And so that allows the employee to go into the individual market and have the full shopping availability of all the plans there. And the employer can exit trying to identify the plan or the couple of plans that are going to make the most sense for their employee base. So for an employer with a small HR department, this could be a very viable solution.
Interesting. So this is new. And, you know, I will jump back for a second. Why is it that the association plans haven't really taken off? Because that certainly seemed like a logical place locally, nationally, that some of these larger groups, you know, in the HR, I think of SHRM or some of them, who could create these massive pools across the country and maybe save some money. I'm just curious why it hasn't gone anywhere, or if you know why.
My speculation is that once you have a whole constellation of groups with different ages and different health experience and different morbidity, and they're buying into one premium or one type of plan, it works for some, but others may find something cheaper or more attractive outside of that pool. And so you can wind up with a death spiral within the pool. There are some associations that do it very well and are very successful. They bind themselves financially. They have set up really good governance. It takes a lot of discipline in order to make it work. But for those where it does work, it's beautiful.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. It's just one of those things where when you initially thought of it, you were like, seems like a neat idea, right? And to bring groups together that have commonalities. But as you say, age plays such a factor in these anyways. You know, that risk pool, you don't realize how much of a difference it makes on the age side, does it?
As the oldest state in the country, we definitely feel the effect of that.
Yeah, there's no question about it. Hey, we're talking with Kevin Lewis. He's the CEO of Community Health Options. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobs in ME.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their QuickPost product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobs and ME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsandme.com. That's jobsandme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
Today's economic environment presents many challenges. It seems as though it's harder than ever to navigate the investment landscape to seek out adequate return and manage risk at the same time. ClearPoint Financial is a financial advocate for those who need assistance making complex decisions about how to manage their wealth. They inspire their clients to make informed decisions through education, communication, and service that exceeds expectation. Call Michael Toole at ClearPoint Financial, the official financial advisor of the Maine Black Bears.
Guys, when you buy your clothes at DXL, you look good. But you feel like a rock star. So if you want to look and feel like a... You'll find all the brands you love, waist size 38 and up, all in one awesome store. DXL, you're looking good. Right now, Harbor Bay long sleeve tees are just $29.99 each when you buy two or more.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill at verrill-law.com. Today we're talking with Kevin Lewis, CEO of Community Health Options, and we're talking about healthcare today. Kevin, you know, how long have you been with Community Health Options?
Well, I co-founded Health Options, so
how long?
Since the start. So, we incorporated 8 years ago in September, it's been an eight-year journey.
So, did you ever envision it would be the road you took in for all 8 years?
Quite honestly, say 10 years ago, I didn't know it would be quite this road, but I was up for the challenge in terms of how we organize a health plan to work more in concert with members, with providers, to gain greater efficiencies. And so that it happened to be through the marketplace and developing individual and small group, and now large group lines of business, it's really been evolving.
When you look at the marketplace, just in general, right, the overall, the number of carriers in Maine, do you see a healthy marketplace? Do you see a strained marketplace? I'm just kind of curious your assessment of how you feel the healthcare system as it is today stands.
I think it's rather healthy to an extent. I think
healthy-ish.
Healthy-ish. Yeah.
I don't even know if that's a word.
Just to toot our horn a little bit, were it not for us, we wouldn't have had competition in the marketplace for a couple of years, both mm-hmm. at the beginning and then also in the middle when we were in both times, we had two carriers. So we've been in it from the very beginning, the only carrier that's been in the marketplace from the inception. And we're really proud of that because we're committed to Maine. We're committed to mm-hmm. our service area. That competition among carriers, I think it does well for consumers. I know it does well for us because we're a very competitive bunch, and we want to be the very best health plan. I grew up as a competitive person, so it's just in our, I think it's as humans, it's in our nature, it's in our blood.
So the team that you, how many employees now?
We have 170.
170 employees. I'm pretty sure when we talked in 2013, you did not have 170 employees.
Oh, no. No. We've definitely grown. And as we've matured, we brought in more of the functionality in-house. And we've done that purposefully and planfully, and it's really been a nice development. I have to crow about our care management team, our claims team, the folks that work with our brokers. I mean, we have, I think, some of the best talent together of anybody out there.
So when you say, hey, you know, why community health options? Somebody says, why? What's your answer?
Well, we're local. We're a nonprofit. We care deeply about our members, and we care deeply about the businesses that we serve. We are, as I mentioned, very competitive, so we're always looking at how we get better. We're competitive with ourselves in terms of how do we make sure that we don't just meet the service level agreements, but we exceed them. And how do we get, how do we make a solution for that business owner out there who's struggling? How do we make sure that the member who needs XYZ care gets access to that in a very good time frame and able to get back to, you know, their quality of life the way they want it to be?
And really, at the end of the day, isn't that the bottom line, right? You know, I think of anybody that I know in the last few years that has issues, it's all about how fast can we get back to being healthy, and you know, plans are a big piece of that because they're either easy to use or not so easy to use, right? To make that work.
Absolutely. And sometimes our members are surprised. They get a call from us, our care management team, when they perhaps have been admitted to the hospital, and they may worry at first when they get the call as to, well, is this going to be some sort of denial? When in fact, we're calling to make sure they have everything they need, to make sure that things are going smoothly, to make sure they understand what the trajectory is for their care plan.
Yeah. No, and that's a big piece of it. Do you find that the doctors, the hospitals, and we'll call the administration of the hospitals, which has had incredible consolidation, as you know, over the last number of years. We can get into that in a little bit, but do you find there's good receptivity to the changes that have happened?
It varies. I think some have been very receptive to us, been very supportive of us. And, you know, that shows in terms of not only their understanding of the dynamics involved, but then also, you know, what we're able to do together between provider and carrier, between the health system and the health insurance company.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, certainly if you listen and you hear, there's a lot of talk about healthcare, and Maine is, as you said, one of the oldest states in the nation, if not the oldest state in the nation. How has that affected Maine's challenges from a doctor, hospital, provider, you know, situation?
Well, there's probably a full day that could be used to talk
about
that.
I'm asking for 30,000 feet here.
Right, right. Well, it's challenging in terms of the location of healthcare services, in terms of the pressure on primary care, yeah. In terms of the patient panel, in terms of the patient's ability to support the care in that community. The Medicare itself doesn't do any favors to Northern Maine in terms of how they pay for care. And yet, there are some real bright spots in terms of what some of the ACOs, the Accountable Care Organizations, are doing, organizing around quality, organizing around focus on patient outcomes. And it is financial, too. And we have to be focused on how do we achieve that quality while reducing overall costs. Mm-hmm. But the faster that we can move away from paying for widgets as a carrier and paying for outcomes and the alignment of quality with payment, the better off our members and the patients and the people in the state will be.
We're talking with Kevin Lewis, CEO of Community Health Options. I'm your host, David Chulo. You're listening to the HR Power Hour. So, you know, Kevin, one of the things you mentioned was Northern Maine or anything above Bangor. Let's just call it what it is. Do you find that individuals or businesses in those areas are challenged more than in the local markets to get the care they need?
I don't know that they're challenged more to get the care they need. I know that they're challenged more to get the price point on the coverage because the provision of care is more expensive north of Bangor than it is in the southern part of the state.
And are the plans aligned with that? When you're talking about your plans from your organization, Community Help Options, are they aware of that? How does that all play into factors?
Yeah, it does show up not only in terms of the premiums, but then it also shows up in terms of what patients have to pay by way of copays and deductibles. And it's something that we're going to have to grapple with as a state. How do we make sure that Northern Maine is as competitive a place for an employer as the southern part of the state? And I believe technology is one way forward to the extent that we can climb our way as a state out of being 49th in the country to perhaps a leading provider of Wi-Fi and application of technology in ways that helps to span the geographic divide. That's got to be one of the principal assets that we deploy.
Well, it's going to be able to grow the state, right? I mean, predominantly all the growth is centered around the Portland market. That's and even southern Maine certainly, but we just don't see that taking off in the northern half of the state. No, Bangor has its pocket, Augusta, Lewiston, Auburn. We get all that, but really outside of that, it's pretty quiet in terms of the growth side of it, and it's aging.
Right. And what I am always thrilled at seeing is those pockets of manufacturing, those businesses that are nevertheless, despite the challenging environment that they're in, they're finding ways to bring new jobs, novel manufacturing to parts of the state that otherwise wouldn't have the kind of opportunity that they're bringing.
So I know you partner a lot with hospitals and providers. What is their biggest challenge? What do you find is your biggest challenge, I should say, in providing what they need?
One of the challenges, frankly, is information. And having that information flow both ways is incredibly vital to both sides of that equation. We would do well to get more access to real-time clinical information. And I think we have some good claims information, administrative data that can support the health systems themselves. So we're working on that. It's been a constant part of our focus since the beginning. We haven't yet come to the perfect solution, but it's something that we work on continuously.
I'm not sure anything will ever be perfect, right? Let's be honest, right, in terms of that, make that happen. But that feedback part you talk about is very important, right? And there is certainly a lot of dialogue about what that emphasis needs to be between getting good data that can be used, analyzed, and provided for future information. And that is certainly a big challenge, I'm sure, from large healthcare systems that have so much data that they almost don't know how much data they have, right? I mean, it's huge.
Right. And so to put a plug in for Health InfoNet that I'm pleased to serve on the board, that has been a very successful model in terms of how we can start to use the vast reservoir of data to the advantage of clinical care. So that is, I think, one of Maine's bright shining stars and something that we can hopefully leverage more as we go forward.
The broker market has changed dramatically. I know brokers that used to be in the healthcare part of the world, and the amount of plans have changed, the healthcare market itself has changed. How is your relationship with brokers today? How has that shifted and changed?
Brokers are incredibly important, and especially when you come to the small group, large group markets. But even for our individuals, 20% of our individuals come to us through brokers. And so they really help to decipher what's there, what's available, to make sure people have the right documentation, are able to navigate through the whole enrollment process. Our enrollment platform, I think, is best in breed. And brokers, we get really good reviews from their use of the platform. Nevertheless, individuals by themselves can sometimes get a little lost. And so that's really where the broker comes in, as that trusted individual in the community. I think for us, we've only built and continue to build upon that relationship from the first year and in 6 years ago, and it's only gotten stronger. So, we're having broker education sessions actually this week in three different locations in the state, And we continue to work that relationship. And our large group market has increased 18% over the last 12 months. We'd like to see that continue to,
of course,
to,
you would,
to climb.
That competitive spirit,
that's
right?
Right. Yeah, that's right. And the large group market is the largest fully insured segment in the market. So it's a natural place for us to continue to focus as well.
Are there any changes to that market that have you really looking at and saying that, hey, that's the place we need to be even more?
Well, I think just because of the achievements we've had with our platform and administration, it's natural for us to really reintroduce ourselves to the whole business and broker community to make sure they understand our ability to really help them succeed. And that's how we look at it, is what the tools that we have are there to help the brokers succeed, to help the businesses succeed. Because at the end of the day, you know, as we've talked about, it's about employee health. It's about maintaining that quality of life, getting back to work quickly when something goes awry, making sure people have the information that they need so they're never anxious where they don't need to be anxious. So it's, you know, we see it as a natural place for us to really shine.
We're talking with Kevin Lewis, CEO of Community Health Options. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. We'll be right back.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobsinme.com has been matching main employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on JobsInME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit JobsInME.com. That's JobsInME.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
The best paints for the job site are at the Home Depot, specifically new Glidden Diamond Paint and Primer. It starts at only $23.98 a gallon. It's specially formulated to spray easier and cover walls faster. A lot faster. So you're done and on to the next job faster. Better paint means better jobs. New Glidden Diamond Paint and Primer, starting at just $23.98 a gallon. You'll only find it in one place. The Home Depot. More saving. More doing. U.S. only.
Life's never perfect, but as realtors, we know living it in the perfect place can make a big difference.
Imagine
hiding from your screeching children in that spacious walk-in closet. Watching the neighbor's dog poop on the freshly sodded grass you negotiated during closing. Dropping your cell phone in the toilet of the spa-like five-piece bathroom. Again. So get the perfect place to house all of life's imperfections. Get Realtor. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
It's 6:42 p.m. Time for Steve Plato and his son Dylan to do the dishes. They talk about everything from the yuckiness of girls to the awesomeness of his soccer team. Sometimes they don't talk at all. Then,
hey!
The dreaded splash fight. It's dad o'clock, and it's the best time of the day. Because the smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Vero at vero-law.com. You know, Kevin, and again, we're talking with Kevin Lewis, CEO of Community Health Options. I'm your host, David Chulo, and again, you're listening to the HR Power Hour. Kevin, you know what's interesting? If I was a small business right now, and my health care plan for my company starts January 1, and I'm considering looking at new options. Maybe I'm happy, but you know what? It's always good to look at what's out there, right? And I do encourage companies from an HR side to, hey, you should look at it every year. Options are out there. How would I go about finding more about your organization, other than obviously on your website? We'll talk about that. But how do I make that decision? How do I look at I get my renewal from my carrier that I get every year. I see the numbers. Maybe another quote comes in from somewhere. How do I get the full plan of options and take that?
Right. Well, your first observation in terms of the website is a good one, and we have a very intuitive website that hopefully will guide people, give them a lot of information. But the broker really is sort of the Sherpa or the best guide to what all is out there, what to consider, because there are so many small group plans. Now, fortunately, they are aligned by metal level. Because in the fully insured, community-rated small group pool, they are all qualified health plans. And so you have your bronze with the lower premiums but greater cost sharing. Then your silver plans right in the middle of the road, and gold, and some support platinum as well. Our silver-level plans in the small group market continue to be where we have the most activity. And I think people say roughly it's 70% plan paid and 30%, you know, employer-employee paid in terms of that breakdown. We're seeing increasing traffic to bronze. And whether it's bronze or silver, we see a lot more activity in terms of the high deductible health plan. So the HSA compatible, so sure. You can fund that HSA. And some employers fund it for their employees, or employees have some sort of structure that they can self-fund their portion of an HSA.
So when they're looking at this and they're trying to make these decisions, and of course, as you said, the broker has different areas. First of all, I do want to say your website is healthoptions.org, correct?
Yes, that's
healthoptions.org.
Correct.
I want to make sure that's out there. And we'll certainly have it on the HR Power Hour site right after the show airs today. But when people are looking at that, do they have a lot of options? I mean, is it these plans are significantly different? Are they similar in nature?
There's a lot of slicing and dicing of the deductible and coinsurance.
But predominantly, they cover the same.
What's different among the plans will be the network. What's different might be some of the add-on features. For instance, we have a chronic illness support program in some of our plans. We can't have the chronic illness support program in a high deductible health plan, but there we have a preventive drug list for employees so that they're not shelling out a lot of money out of pocket for drugs that we know are better off taken on a regular basis so that people don't wind up in the ER or inpatient. So we try and work with what we know to be the best science, as well as what employers can afford, and a coverage that conforms with all the regulatory requirements. You know, it's been evolving, but I think it's been, despite the contraction of the market, those that are in the community rated market have found the experience of the last few years in our platform to be good.
So if I work here in Maine and I'm an employer, but I have employees in Florida, Texas, Louisiana, just throwing out places. As you know, more and more employers are doing remote work, right? People that work other places, they can still have a plan. And how does that work?
Well, we account for that by having a travel network. So we buy into this travel network that is part of the plan. It doesn't, it winds up being seen as part of that network in terms of those employees, that employer. And so that's how we make it work for ourselves. Obviously, that's our solution to try and compete with the nationals that have the benefit of a wide-scale network. But that's been successful for us, and I think our employers have found it to be beneficial.
Sure. And from a standpoint of medication, have you seen, because costs of medication, as you know, continue to increase, have you seen that the deductibles are staying about the same this year for 2020?
We have a combined deductible. So one, we don't split between
the
medical and the pharmacy. But you're absolutely right. The pharmacy has been a leading driver in terms of, it's still about 20-25% of total price. But where you have we look at the different drivers among the different elements, pharmacy is leading the way, unfortunately. And this is the first year that I've seen specialty drug eclipse sort of regular retail pharmacy in terms of cost. And just pointing to the rise of specialty drugs and the cost inflation there.
Now, general question, and because I don't know the answer, there's been a lot of talk of being able to buy pharmaceuticals out of state, out of country, right, different area. Any update on that you're aware of?
I don't have any update on that.
Okay.
We would be anxious to find ways to lower those costs in a way that was safe and regulated.
I was just curious from a state or federal level. I have not heard much about it, so I said I thought I'd ask. You haven't heard it? That means it's probably not being talked about a lot in terms of making that happen. All right, no worries. So if I'm an individual and I go to the exchange, again, is that the best place for individuals to go to check on what the rates are going to be or the plans are?
It's the best place to start. Some individuals, depending on their family income, should also look off exchange. The marketplace is a great initial place to start their search. Each carrier will have, like we have on our website, healthoptions.org, plans that are only available off exchange. There's some difference between on versus off exchange. All of the on exchange plans have to be offered off exchange. So going to the marketplace first gives people a pretty good indication of what's out there.
Is coverage different for off exchange, or is it the same type of coverage? What's the difference between being on or off? Just cost?
There's really the only difference is those plans that are only available off exchange. The on exchange plans, again, they cover the gamut in terms of, from bronze through gold. There's very little in terms of platinum, some catastrophic plans for younger people in Maine, and those that get a waiver.
Let's talk about the last part of this as we wrap up this segment. Would be, you said that you're training brokers, and you said they're an important part of the business. Do you see that continuing, or do you think it's going to become more digital?
I think brokers will always be an important part of the business. I think brokers will also get the advantage of more and more technology and digital. And so that, I think that layer or that segment of the market will continue to transform just as every other aspect of the economy is. And we see it happening now by way of what brokers are employing to help their groups and ways that employers can leverage the knowledge base of the broker. So I see us working together. We have to continually look at how can we add value to our broker community? How can we add value for the purpose of our employers?
Well, I mean, some even talked about exchanges, and some are doing these smaller type exchanges. And helpful?
I think they've been somewhat helpful. They haven't taken off the way that we expected. So back in 2012 and 2013, when Aon, for instance, announced its exchange, a lot of others had some exchanges that they were putting energy into. We haven't seen that take off the way it was expected to. Things, especially in healthcare, for whatever reason, they just take more time.
It does seem to be the truth, isn't it?
5, 10, 15 years, we'll get some more momentum, and we'll see the benefit of some of this technology and these platforms really help consumers and employees.
We're talking with Kevin Lewis, CEO of Community Health Options. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. We'll be right back.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts. StopWrecks.org.
It's 3 p.m., and you just ran out of ink. You have a report due end of day, which is 2 hours from now. You can't push the deadline because end of day means end of today, not end of tomorrow day. What now? Go to your local Staples store. Staples now has an even bigger selection of HP ink and toner. In store, in stock, and at low prices every day. So you can get your ink fast for less. End of story.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. JobsInME.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on JobsInME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit JobsInME.com. That's JobsInME.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at JacksonLewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
We're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Vero at Vero-Law.com. We're speaking with Kevin Lewis, CEO of Community Health Options. We're talking about healthcare today. You know, one of the big terms, Kevin, is telemedicine. What exactly are you seeing that's new and exciting in that area?
Well, we're excited to roll out a new telemedicine solution. It's focused on behavioral health. Initially, in this launch year, we know that people, when they leave an inpatient setting, have difficulty getting that seven-day follow-up that we know is so important so they don't get readmitted, so they don't have a tragic event. And yet, because of what we talked, some of the things we talked about earlier, access issues, the geography of Maine, it's difficult for people to get that follow-up appointment mm-hmm. in a timely fashion.
Very true.
So we've launched our telemedicine solution initially focused on behavioral health so that we can hopefully get people into a professional support within that week of being discharged from an inpatient setting. That's in 2019. Where we take it from here, we hope to build on it even further. Again, looking at how we can apply technology to bridge some of the geographic divide, bridge some of the challenges that we have throughout Maine in terms of access to primary care, to behavioral health. And we know with behavioral health just how difficult it's been the last 15, 20 years in our state.
No, there's no question. And the technological change of being able to use your smartphone to take your pulse and or use your Apple Watch to and to be able to FaceTime in to a doctor makes a huge difference to be able to access. And as you said, trying to get an appointment with a doctor is difficult at times. And I don't see that changing either because there just is such a shortage in terms of it. And I don't know how we fix that part of it, but that's the truth.
Yeah, and there's real geographic disparity in terms of the access levels in the state. So as we mentioned, you know, there's a lot going on in southern Maine in terms of growth, and we don't see that as much in central Maine or down east or up north. And so we'd like to see what we can do together with providers to provide that biometric information, to provide ways that primary care can get the benefit of technology and hopefully, you know, de-stress some of their patient panels and work with their patients without necessarily having them drive 50 miles in the snowstorm to see them.
No, you're exactly right. As we wrap up the show today, you know, I'll give you an opportunity to talk a little bit about your partnerships with groups in the community, because I know that's important to you and your organization.
Yeah, thank you, David. One of the things that's been a hallmark of our plan since the beginning is really working with the community and working with community partners. Initially, it was community care teams, and then we developed that into very fruitful work with area agencies on aging throughout the state. So folks that may need some additional supports, whether it's transportation or meals, or simply having the eyes right there within their community to understand what is it that they're grappling with, what is it that's making it difficult for them to follow through on their care plans, whether it's a ramp, whether it's you know, getting rid of some of the obstacles that are causing them falls. Just having that med rec in the home is so valuable for a health plan. And so we've been blessed with this, these partnerships, and it's really been working out well for our members to tap into that extra set of resources.
No, it's great. And you guys do great work. You know, it's I'm not going to wait another, I don't know, 5 years or so to put you on the air again, because I want to hear more again about where things are going. You guys have done an amazing job over since 2013. Just an amazing job. So congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you very much, David.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. And now, your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by Verrill.
This is Liz Johnston from Verrill. During your hiring process, do you ask employees about their rates of pay with current and former employers? If so, this tip is for you. There are a number of reasons employers should avoid asking about former rates of pay when hiring new employees. First and most importantly, it may be illegal. A number of states and cities, including Delaware, Massachusetts, New York City, and as of this year, Maine, have made it an unlawful employment practice for employers to ask prospective employees about their former rates of pay. Aside from being unlawful, relying on salary history to set a newly hired employee's starting pay may call your compensation system into question if you are ever subject to a lawsuit alleging unequal pay on the basis of sex. If two employees performing comparable work are paid differently, you generally want to be able to show that the differences are based on seniority, geographic location, education, experience, or other bona fide job-related factors. For additional information regarding requesting prospective employees' salary history, contact me or another member of Verrill's Labor and Employment Group.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by Verrill. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.